This is a labor exchange on KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO and Denver Newspaper Guild, Local 37074. We have a special guest on today's show, Sarah Terry, the director of a new documentary, A Decent Home. Join a screening of the movie at the University of Colorado Boulder Eaton Building this Friday, July 16th, 2022 at 5:30 p.m. The documentary covers the importance of mobile home parks as affordable homes and the struggles of families to keep these homes as mobile home parks are sold to developers. Director Sarah Terry is a member of the International Cinematographers Guild, Local 600. Welcome to the Labor Exchange, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, thanks so much for being on. First, we like to start our show by getting to know our guests a bit more. So can you tell us about yourself and also why you decided to make this documentary?
Sure. I'm a longtime, storyteller who started in newspapers and public radio and magazine writing and wound up in the place I love best, which is documentary photography and documentary filmmaking about 20 years back. I am very proud to be a member of Local 600 here in Los Angeles, as you pointed out, which does not involve me being a cinematographer. I'm a unit photographer. I can shoot stills on film sets, although I was the cinema photographer on A Decent Home. I do love having my eye behind the camera. And I was drawn to this story. It took 6.5 years to make this film. So I started it in 2015 because of a news article that I read about something called Mobile Home University, a place where a guy named Frank Rolfe teaches mid-level investors to buy and sell mobile home parks at the greatest profit with the least amount of cost on the investor's part and care. And in that article, it mentioned that the Carlyle Group, one of the largest private equity firms in the world, had just begun buying up mobile home parks. And for me, that was outrageous because the rest of the private equity world was watching. And in sort of 5 short years, we have seen private equity, which has already ravaged many parts of our economy and our lives, move with full predatory speed into buying up mobile home parks, which you've experienced all around Colorado for sure. And one of the stories in the film, the main story in the film, is also set in Colorado. So I have a great affinity for you all.
Yeah. And what are some of the challenges that these residents of the mobile home parks face when private equity comes in and starts buying up these properties? And maybe even go back to the basics. How does a mobile home operate? What are people paying for when they're in a mobile home park? Can you go into some of that detail?
Sure. The most important vulnerability and dichotomy to understand in all of this is that most mobile home park residents own their homes. They either own them outright or buying them on a mortgage, quite often a personal loan, because mobile homes are often called chattel. But they own their homes and they rent the land they live on when they live in a mobile home park, unless you're one of the few co-ops around the country where people own the land they live on. That's a growing movement in Colorado for sure. But essentially, in the history of mobile home parks, they started out as mom and pop things. They grew up with the sort of the American wanderlust of hitting the road, back when mobile homes were actually mobile, which they're not anymore. They're, built in factories and brought on big trucks to sites and then cost thousands of dollars to move, which is another hitch. The mom and pops ran these as businesses where they made a fair, return, and park mobile home owners paid a fair rent. But once the Carlyle Group stepped in, once private equity did its private equity thing, looking for a vacuum of capital, they surged in and they have come in and jacked up lot rents in the parks they've bought across the country by 60 to 70%. In some cases that means a mobile home park resident goes from paying $300 a month to $500 a month in there just their lot rental, which, when you look at it in those terms, somebody with a, more affluence or, a higher income could go, well, gosh, that's not much, a couple hundred bucks a month. What do you care? Put it in percentages. 60%. If your mortgage went up 60%, what would that do to you? These are people who've been othered and stereotyped in our society for so long. You can still say trailer trash and nobody's going to call you out on it. It's a glaring misunderstanding of the importance of this housing and the humanity of the people who live there. You know, this is one of the most important, the largest sources of unsubsidized affordable housing in America. 20 million Americans, give or take a few, live in mobile homes. Not all of them are in parks. But the ones that are in parks are increasingly vulnerable to this purely cold capitalistic view of making the most money you can. Mobile home park residents have fewer rights, for the most part, than apartment dwellers do. If you rent an apartment, the owner of that building is responsible for the maintenance, the upkeep. The park owner only pays for the land and generally the utility hookups, you know, to it. So they quite often talk about how much money they're having to put into maintaining parks. But I've seen these private equity firms, you know, sell sheets, which are like, we're turning massive profits from day one, great cash flow. You know, it's just scandalous to me that we're not calling out that kind of greed more readily. And I think we are. It's getting there. We're seeing more and more articles about this all across the country, about these parks being bought up and the kind of greed that's being manifest. But boy, oh boy. Like, seriously, we need to ask ourselves, who are we becoming as Americans? You know, when the wealthiest of the wealthy buy up, you know, homes, you know, that are on the lowest rung of what we call the American dream. That's why I made the film. It makes me so angry.
Yeah, and you really hit on a lot of things that are currently ongoing. Just 5 days ago, there was an article about a park in Gunnison. Yeah, and
we're screening in Gunnison, so I'm looking forward to being able to meet folks from that park.
Well, in the article, they didn't, you know, fill any potholes, cut down any trees that are going to fall. They have bad water, a spotty water supply, and then rent went up 73% in that article.
Yeah, there are some good park owners. Those tend to still be the families that own parks. But increasingly, all the things you're talking about, that's exactly the hallmark of a corporate owner, a private equity owner, an absentee owner, a private equity firm that is almost always outside of the state, taking profits out of any given state and doing little to invest in the community. I was at, I interviewed Frank Ralph from Mobile Home University, who no longer lets the press into his classes. But I heard him tell people, look, cut down the trees, empty the swimming pool, get rid of everything that costs you, reduce all of your costs. And on raising the rents, he said, look, you know, he goes, these rents haven't been raised in a long time. It was just mom and pops who didn't have any good business sense. He's like, raise the rent, raise it, you know, and it's because it's so expensive to move their homes. Most folks will just go down and get a couple more hours of work a week at the local Walmart. That's how he spoke about them. And it's a denigration and a calculation and a cold heartedness that is turning home, you know, something that we all need, you know, to be secure and to thrive in whatever form that home is. But it's turning home into a commodity that's being bought and sold by the highest bidder, you know, and that to me, again, just, you know, puts a stake through the heart of one of the things I hold most dear about America.
Can you describe some of the people in the documentary, their stories and how they touched you?
Of course. Also, I just want to drop in here that we're talking about the film because we're going to be screening in the Front Range in like eight, we have eight screenings coming up in July, and I'll be getting to see some of these folks again. The story of Denver Meadows, a mobile home park in Aurora, it is the heart of the film. It goes, that story goes through the entire film. And that's where I met people like Luce, who divorced and needed an affordable home to live so that she could pay for college for her students. She moved into Denver Meadows and wound up becoming an activist and a community leader when the owner of that park, the story of Denver Meadows was a little different. It wasn't a private equity firm coming in and jacking up lot rents, but it was somebody who wanted to sell land that used to be on the outskirts of town and is now right across the creek from, you know, Anschutz Medical Campus with a light rail and an interstate. So that land got valuable. He wanted it rezoned so he could make a huge profit from it. Luce became part of this amazing, largely Spanish-speaking community that fought so hard. And you all may know what happened there, but I'm not going to spoil it if you haven't seen the film. They fought so hard to save their communities that Colorado now has laws that actually do something to protect park residents, whereas Colorado had nothing before. So that's Luce and Petra, a German immigrant who lived in the park for 18 years and raised her children there and created a magical backyard. So beautiful with berry bushes and fairy lights. And, you know, that she's the one who, you know, talks about just you to come home and sit down and, you know, plop down and you're welcome to come in anytime. So it's people. I met residents in a park that I really wanted to surprise you with this park in the film to sort of go, oh, you think you know what a mobile home park looks like? This park, Santiago Villa, is right next door to Google headquarters in Silicon Valley. And there's folks who work at Google who live in this park because they can't afford the multi-million dollar homes that are there. You know, I just wanted to show this hits all of us. And I think you'll find the people that you meet in the film a representative. For me, they were representative of people I've met everywhere who live in mobile home parks. These are people who I think understand the question, how much is enough? You know, they don't need 10 houses and 20 cars and endless vacations. They know how much enough is, what family is, what community is. They may not always have enough, you know, they may be working 2 and 3 jobs to reach that point. But I feel like we need to listen to these people as a country that's lost its way in consumerism and this wealth gap and the concentration of wealth in the hands of so few. Because like really, how many billions do you need? You know, I met people in these parks who live on fixed incomes, who live on Social Security, who regularly give out of their maybe $1,100 a month, $5 every month to the local animal shelter because they care about, you know, pets, $5 every month to the World Wildlife Fund. It's like there's a generosity and a decency, you know, in these spaces that I feel we really, really need to pay attention to so that we can learn, you know, kind of where we've gone wrong.
Yeah. And for folks that want to see this movie, A Decent Home, about mobile home parks that has sections around Colorado, the next showing is going to be in Boulder on Friday, July 16th, 2022 at 5:30 p.m. That's at the University of Colorado Eaton Humanities Building. We'll also have all the details on the KGNU website under the Labor Exchange. This is a part of Colorado community screening dates that you're doing. They started in May in Aurora, and then they wrap at the end of the month in Carbondale. Why was staging a screening tour in Colorado important?
Well, with documentaries, and by the way, the third leg of our tour will be in October. We're screening at the statewide affordable housing conference and Housing Colorado, and we'll also screen hopefully in Colorado Springs and Fort Collins at that time. So with a documentary film that has a social, you know, impact, that is a social justice film, you want your film to do more than just be in film festivals. We're wonderful, but select group of people go. I mean, we will probably ultimately be on a streaming platform, you know, maybe near the end of the year, possibly have a broadcast date. But what happens at the community level is for this tour in Colorado in particular, we've worked with park residents and some of the organizations in Colorado that work on affordable housing, 9to5, Thistle, the Civic Canopy, you know, are engaged with us, and the residents in each of these communities, park residents are also working to bring it together, because for a community that's been so neglected and so othered and so invisible, the film is a really wonderful way to like say, come join with us, come see who we are, come learn about our issues. You know, that people are inviting city officials and state legislators and, you know, other people in their communities to come and be part of a conversation. We want this to be available freely. So it's this really dynamic space. And it's also, aided in many ways by the fact that there's more and more attention being brought to this issue. So Colorado is in a really interesting forefront of the conversation. I tell people in other states, you know, look to Colorado, see what they're doing, see how they got that legislation passed.
Yeah. And for our listeners, Colorado has passed two rounds of legislation supporting mobile home park residents. The first one had some issues, so they ran another to try to make that stronger. That second bill has not been implemented. And there's certainly, as you mentioned, as with all legislation, there were trade-offs and challenges there. One thing on the tours, I noticed that you're going to Breckenridge, and we recently had ski patrol workers at Breckenridge Resort. It's owned by Vail Resorts. They voted to unionize with CWA, the Communication Workers of America. I'm also seeing activism in places like Durango, Big Sky, Montana, these places that are where workers at the ski industry are unionizing to try to increase their wages, to try to be able to survive in these communities. Can you talk a little bit about ski resort towns and the role of mobile home parks for those workers in those areas?
Sure. I also want to just back up and call one thing out on the legislation that passed in May. The biggest part, the part that park residents wanted most of all, was some form of rent stabilization because they wanted a cap on how much rent could go up, you know, during a year. And the governor threatened to veto the entire bill if that wasn't taken out. So just like, let's be clear about, you know, some of the politics that go on there and the places where we still need to be in conversation with folks. Regarding ski towns, you know, there's such an interesting space, as Coloradans know, of, they're seasonal in many ways, then bring in very high-end revenues, tourists from around the world, the amazing mountain spaces and skiing towns you have in Colorado. But, oh, hello, as we learned during the pandemic, the truly essential workers among us are the ones who keep things running. You know, they're the people who are working the ski lifts, they're the cleaners at hotels there, and those people are priced out of communities that can draw the wealthiest of the wealthy, who priced out of places where people can afford to be buying a small percentage of people are buying their second or third home so that they can be there 2 weeks a year. You will find mobile home parks in a lot of these towns. Aspen has mobile home parks. They're in several places, and they are an important source of affordable housing. They feel like we're having to go, wait a minute. Life is not about how much money you can make. Life is about healthy, thriving communities with a mix of housing and a mix of people and a mix of jobs. And we have gone off the deep end, you know, or about to, in losing that balance and those perspectives. So with unionization going on, with attention being brought to affordable housing, mobile home parks, I think it's all part of recentering us in a space that says, you know what really matters? Being a human being, you know, being in relationship to the other human beings in your community in healthy ways.
Well, and we see affordable housing as a labor issue, as a union issue, because our members, like you said, should have a ability to live a sustainable life in or near the community they work in. I know that the Teamsters were involved in Iowa in helping organize. Can you describe that a little bit? And then maybe just describe broadly what you think the labor movement or union members in Colorado or around the country, how they can be supportive of this kind of work.
Oh, my gosh. I love labor. But let's be honest, this has not always been like a front and center labor issue. Labor, with your strength and renewing strength, is so important in this conversation. And it's really exciting. So in Colorado, public health has been very involved. In Iowa, which is the main secondary story of the film, labor has been very involved. They don't have a strong public health sector like Colorado does. But labor, the Teamsters got involved. Head of the Teamsters there, Jesse Case, and also the AFL-CIO, Charlie Wishman, they're very, very strong on housing. They have come in. The Teamsters have in Iowa have a nonprofit called Team Can, And through that nonprofit, they have been helping to organize residents of mobile home parks. They support people. They are able to bring food from other parts of the state where they have relationships, where there's a surplus of food. They bring it for free to many of the parks and distribute it because, you know, when your rent's going up, you don't have money to buy food so much. They're involved in trying to get legislation passed at the state level. They have built alliances with social justice workers, with park residents. And Iowa is like about at the bottom of the list in terms of protections for park residents. Home is possibly the most intersectional issue we all have. It lets everybody come to the table. You know, racial justice, economic justice, labor, you name it, health. Everybody can come to that table because home is the base from which everything else happens. So like with your labor folks, I sure do hope they'll check your website. They'll go to the film's website, adecenthomefilm.com, to find the screenings. Show up at a screening in your community. We're in Leadville, Gunnison, Golden, Boulder, Carbondale, and you know, back again in the fall. But ask how you can get involved. It's like, it's building alliances. We can't afford to be siloed anymore. And I think home is actually the issue, an affordable home that unites 98.5% of Americans, those of us who are being pushed out. Why are we all being priced out of affordable housing?
Well, and that hits so close to home for me. Recently, I had a sister who just left to move to Iowa so that she could buy a house that was affordable. She just got married a few weeks before. And then another sister that's moving to Arizona because could not find affordable housing here in Colorado.
Yeah, you guys have actually skyrocketed. Your prices are outrageous in rents, everything.
And as someone who doesn't own, I mean, and grew up here, I always sort of had these escape routes where I was like, oh yeah, Denver's getting expensive, but Edgewater, that's where I'm going. Edgewater's now one of the most expensive parts of the metro area. So I was like, no, I'll be in Lakewood. No one's ever going to think Lakewood's cool. Lakewood has gone skyrocketed. You know, some places have always been unaffordable. I'd say Golden, Arvada, some of those communities have been, you know, even when I was in high school in the late 90s were, you know, outside of the realm of me thinking I would afford a house there. But it's just, you know, it's hard because you feel like you've built a career, you've built a family, and you want that sort of next step. So I noticed that your frontline producers, of course, there are folks within the executive producing ranks, but amongst the frontline producers, your editor, yourself, they're all women. What do you think it means to have a strong team of women writing with you and working with you on this? And how do you think that permeates the film?
What a great question. I think you're the only person who's asked me that. I hope this doesn't get edited out for time, but it was deliberate on my part. And we also had, you know, a few very strong male members of the team, but I, you know, created a different kind of decision-making hierarchy for the film. I, you know, created spaces where I wanted to make sure everybody had involvement and input in what I think of as a more, you know, feminine gendered way of approaching it, which I felt was really essential to creating a film that, I mean, let's be honest, it doesn't pull any punches. I think it's actually kind of edgy. I think we know what it's like to be taken for granted in many ways. They're both young women on my team and more experienced, you know, women. And I think we've all known those spaces and known how hard we've had to fight to be heard. And I think those empathies, you know, and I also built a team that had, you know, we had a queer assistant editor, a, you know, biracial editor. I just felt those differences in experience and perspective sometimes give you a point of view that if you're the dominant power group, sorry, white men, I do love you, but you know, it's just a different way of seeing things.
Well, and I think I didn't actually create that parallel between sort of the voice of these folks in the mobile home parks and the voice of women that is often discounted. Yeah. And yeah.
You know what that feels like, I think, so we can relate.
Well, even into what you said before about trailer trash, words that are acceptable, there's a certain word that starts with a B that I think I'm not going to say on the radio, but is certainly acceptable in common parlance and shouldn't be. And so there's connections there. So Bob Laguerre, the former and very short serving Aurora mayor, is in the film. He was served as an appointment for a year and a half from city council. You know, from a viewer's perspective, he comes off very tone deaf and almost aloof. And then, frankly, seems much more sympathetic to the developer than to the people losing their homes. Can you talk about interviewing him and how that felt and how you felt he handled that situation as mayor?
So he had been on the city council for many years previously, right? So he was very involved in Aurora City Council. Aurora City Council has historically been a conservative pro-development space. And literally there was a city councilor who lost to a very progressive candidate a couple of years ago, who used to have on his website, you know, come to me to talk about, you know, development in Aurora as a city councilor. And it was on his business site, you know, yeah. So that's the coziness of that. And I think, you know, I actually went as a journalist kind of prepared to try to understand, to interview the mayor. I'd waited until there was a lot of what felt like backroom dealings going on in the situation of Denver Meadows. Your listeners probably may not know this, but, you know, sunshine laws regulate what meetings can happen behind closed doors. It's a way of making sure that the public knows what elected officials are doing. In Colorado, the only exemption to your sunshine law is zoning issues. And oh, hello. Is that like the most fundamental issue in what your community looks like? Zoning, you know, rezoning spaces, rezoning a mobile home park to being high-end residential commercial to take, you know, advantage of your location across from Anschutz Medical Campus. So it's so many things that just we've ignored or taken for granted. But I think, you know, Bob Laguerre, in interviewing him, like I said, I was prepared to kind of want to go, what are you, because he excluded other city councilors, other residents, other negotiators from the meetings with the park owner. And I found out, of course, it was legal, but I wanted to ask, you know, I was just thinking I was going to need to guide the interview in a way that would help him, you know, where I could find out what was actually going on. He just said things when you see the film that it were so, I nearly fell off my chair. You know, I could see his press person in the back of the room going, oh dear, we should end the interview now. And I was like, no, I just need another minute here. But he tells you all kinds of things, and it's, you'll find it throughout the film with the folks who are, you know, the protagonists, the people who are buying up parks, or, you know, like Frank Rolfe. There's a banality to their indifference. You know, there's a, because the mayor does appear to be very indifferent. I can't speak for him. I don't know, but I didn't edit him to look in any, I wasn't making anything dramatic about him, you know, like to sort of go, oh, this is how I want to show him. That's what he was and how he presented. And I think it's because this culture has been so driven for at least half a century by make as much money as you can. And of course, as I say in the film, pressure on the land, those almost incomprehensible words, they mean how much money can you make from the land? You know, they're not about the human pressure on the land. So I think he was able to speak in these ways that it just, I don't think he was being evil. You know, I don't think he was being bad. I don't think Frank Rolfe is bad. I think it's just these things, this is the way they think because this is a culture that has created a narrative that tells them that's the right way to think. And that's why it's so encouraging to me that we can write a new narrative, right? We can be the ones, it's just a story. Somebody started it and a lot of people believed it. So we have that power to write a new narrative that says, you know what, greed isn't good. You know, home is central to all of us. This is the new culture that we're going to be talking about. And I think it's coming, especially with younger people and the values they're expressing.
Yeah, and I think that's a great spot to end our conversation. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with us. Thanks for being on the Labor Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope we get to see some labor folks at the screenings. Please come up and introduce yourself if you're in a union. You're one of my favorite folks.
Great. This has been the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. We are a member of the Labor Radio Network. Check out more great labor conversations on laborradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, and we've been talking with Sarah Terry, the director of a new documentary, A Decent Home. There's a free screening of this movie in Boulder on Friday, July 16th, 2022 at 5:30 p.m. It's at the University of Colorado in the Eaton Building. There are showings throughout that week in Leadville, Golden, Breckenridge, Gypsum, and Carbondale. We'll have all those details on the KGNU website on the Labor Exchange.